Welcome to the On The Bounce show. Wow, we've got a big show ahead today. It is, of course, the 10th episode, and in this one, we're going to be celebrating elite violence. Now, there's no better week for it because the Boks are obviously taking on the Wallabies again in the Rugby Championship, and Dricus du Plessis will be defending his title against Israel Adesanya in the UFC. Now, when I say elite violence, we're not going to talk about, you know, anything too gratuitous. It's just that in a world that's kind of going a little bit soft and a little bit weird and a little bit haywire, it's kind of cool when you see people like the Springboks and Dricus. They've really come to the fore by just sticking to their guns, blixing irks, being physically strong, being dominant. And I think other people in their realms could learn a hell of a lot by how they go about their business. So we're going to be talking about that. All the big football leagues, except for the PSL, kicking off this weekend. So we're going to get into that. Yeah, I think that's pretty much the intro. Let's get into it with Sandile.
How's it going, brother? Let's go. Let's get into it. Super exciting week. So little sleep will be happening this weekend. Super excited. Let's just jump straight into it. Rugby Championship, brother.
Rugby Championship. Now, it was a great first weekend. Of course, big shout out to Mfundo. So that we had like a competition last week that we can win a case of Clipdrift Premium, which was a really cool prize. You know, it's a good brandy. And all he did was he went onto clipdrift.gold.co.za, as we've been saying for the last few weeks. He spun, he got his player, he posted it onto social media. And with that, we've chosen him to win the case of brandy. So this week, if you want to win a case of brandy as well with our friends from Clipdrift, go onto clipdrift.gold.co.za. If you're new to the game or just playing again, go into the game there. I'm going to do it again, show you how simple it is. You get a little fixture list. You go into that fixture, you press play. And with that, you get a chance to spin a little wheel. Last week, I got Cheslin. Cheslin played well last week, huh? This week, I got Jesse Creel. Okay, so Jesse, number 13, he's our man. In a revised Bok team, this is going to be wonderful. Cookie. So, right, clip drift, that's gold at CDOT today. Find your guy, screenshot that, and then tag us either onto X or on Instagram. And then basically, if we choose your player, you could be like Mfundo and you could have a case of brandy.
Yeah. Shout out Mfundo. And we see you talking shit on Twitter as well. So on X. So
it's good. Keep the banter going, guys. Keep because banter going, yeah. I mean, we have so much to talk about with rugby. First and foremost, just gut feeling. Your thoughts on the game from Saturday?
Great game. Look, we called it. We said it was going to be a beatdown. And, you know, played well, my favorite word. We were clinical.
Yes.
Except Sasha's little shank, but it's okay.
Well, it was his first kick of the day.
Yeah, so we let it go. But like I said, that was a true showcase of where we're moving and how we're going to play moving forward. Super enterprising, hand-to-hand stuff. And, you know, a lot of creativity. And I think we're getting used to these new rules. I think something that we were concerned about, we thought the referees were going to be such a big impact. And it really wasn't, you know, that bad, you know. So, yeah, it was a great game.
So I started that game. And I'm not saying this now as like I told you so. But I wanted this game to be the one that eclipses the 49-0 loss that we had in Brisbane. I can't remember the year now. Damn, I think it was like 2007 or... It was just before the Boks became good with Jake White.
Yeah.
We went there and we got 49 ducks.
Zip.
So when we were 33 up and all the cards came in, it was a bit just like we should have put 50 on those guys.
Yeah.
Because the first time this Aussie team, as I said in the intro, like the elite level of violence that when big people who know what they're doing can shut you out in every aspect. Like I've watched all the sort of post-mortem shows from Australia land, and it was just so clear. Like, those Aussies didn't know where to go. They were being manhandled by men, big men.
Yeah, those Aussies, you know, nothing more, you know, poetic than watching Australians say, we really got our brakes beating off of us.
Yeah.
So that was a beautiful thing to watch.
Obviously, it all starts with the tight five. We've known this from the start.
Yep.
Super rugby nowadays, it's great. The ball goes all over the place. The guys do a lot of playing, as they say, in the analysis. But when you have an engine room that's going to just go backwards and get physically out-muscled like that, you're really going to struggle at this level of the game. So going straight into this week, what are your thoughts? Again, first, gut instincts when you saw that team, 10 changes.
10 changes. Once again, shout out to South African depth. Because
shout out to Rassi giving podcast content.
I was like, we were like, what is going on? A lot of big changes, but a lot of well-deserved changes. You know, Lukanya Arm comes back in. We've been waiting to see what he's got. You know, We thought they were going to drop Jesse Kirill. Didn't do that. So we paired them up together.
I'd prefer you to use the word rest. We don't drop guys in the box.
Oh, sorry. We rotate.
We rotate.
We rotate. And also because we're going, you know, we go to New Zealand or we come home.
So it's the two games in Oz, come back, 1 week break, and then we go
so
two games at home against New Zealand.
Perfect rotation because we know New Zealand's coming with a lot of different energy, which we're going to get into. But yes, I really like the rotation in the team and continuity as well a little bit.
Well, no, there's no continuity in this team.
You're right. Sorry. Yeah. So wholesale changes, but it's the same team that played against Portugal relatively, but it's going to be a great game and we're going to go win it clinically.
So there was quite something that's interesting about it. If you look at the, like you track the trends of Bok viewership, right? Yeah. And fandom back in the day, the Bok team got announced and people were irate for about 2 hours on Twitter. Yeah. Early days of Twitter here, right? Back when we were all over the place, the Alistair Garcia realm before that even. And then Rusty kind of got everything together where people just obviously like the results and they trusted the process.
If we're winning, who's going to complain?
Exactly. But I think this is the team where I look at and my initial reaction was, what's going on here? Old school theory is when you look at a test team, you look at the spine of that team.
Yep.
The hooker, the eighth man. So 2, 8, 9, 10, and you're 15. These are like your stalwarts. These are your guys who are going to run your game. These are the guys that got the caps. If you look at the spine of this team, are 2, 8 they got like less than
17 caps.
They've got what was it? I forgot now. 17 caps.
Yeah.
1-7 in those key positions as you go down. 17 caps. If you look at our tight five, okay, again, because rugby's about the engine room, it's about that forward platform. Mm. Our tight five has 30 caps. Just that.
Yeah, that's
low. So I look at that and I think, love changes. I love the rotations. I love the guys getting a chance. But you need a platform. Yep. This is the thing. Like, if you want to fuck up Oaks physically, as we've known about this,
from the beginning,
it's a platform. And then I looked at it. I gave it a day to simmer because this is what I try to do now. I'm trying to be more mature as a fan. Let's look at a few things. And then I just looked at it and go, okay, cool. I know what he's doing here. And then there's this guy, I forget his name now, on X, one of the best analysts, Angus somebody.
Yeah.
This Bok pack, basically, almost the exact Bok pack with a few injuries here and there, was picked for an SAA game against Bristol on a tour. So Rusty was looking at it like, what do I do with a young pack? But he looked at this 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So this wasn't him going, this certainly needs a game, this certainly needs a game. So this plan was in place. And then formally in the press conference, Rusty said, look, there's so little to choose from in key positions, we have to actually select them. It's a slap in the face. We don't select them.
Yeah.
So you'll get the talk about slaps in the face. I mean, the Aussie lock, who no one knew unless you used the word Australia lock before his name.
Yeah.
He says slap in the face. Joe Schmidt was talking about inconsistencies. But guys, when the Bok make changes, it's part of this whole great plan. Do you agree that this is part of a great plan, or are we going game to game?
Look, there's a big part of me that understood where you were coming from when the team was first announced, because with, you know, New Zealand dropping, you want to make sure that we get those points and it's nothing surprising. So for
such
me,
a good point, because I thought we go 5-5, we've got 10 points on the log, New Zealand will have 5 at best.
Yeah, so for me, I, coming off that Argentina game, and, you know, we always, because Rusty's a serial winner, we back his strategy. But there is a big part of me that worries if we truly underestimated Australia because of how great we played. Look, for me, with Rusty, we always trust the process. But this is, you know, we could be shooting ourselves in the foot instead of just taking the 10 points and then going into Argentina, maybe possibly doing that against the All Blacks, you know, with a buffer of, you know, the additional 5. So I am a bit cautiously like, what are we doing moving forward? I hope it goes well.
So maybe it was that's my friend. That's really unprofessional.
That is crazy, Ben.
Maybe
that is so unlike you, Ben.
I tell you what, there's many, many permutations towards a Rusty decision. And ultimately, I almost feel like it's fun to speculate that as a sports show host. But there's a couple other things I wanted to kind of bring up there is that normally in the past, when you put a youngster or inexperienced guys in, they'll be playing like, say, a young scrum off, a little bit experienced fly half, and vice versa. You get guys in the forward pack who say inexperienced hooker, 2 experienced props.
Yep.
Like, well, you know what I'm saying here. So if you just put a whole bunch of youngsters and inexperienced oaks together and it goes badly, there's a slight stigma that might actually be attached to this. My friend Zellum on the Zells and Kyo show mentioned this as well.
Yeah.
And I always look at that because I always think back, like I know Dave van Hoosling personally. He's a friend of mine. He was a talented young scrum off. Nick Mallett threw him to the wolves with Cuffy de Toy.
Yeah.
So it was a 9-10 combination against New Zealand. They got absolutely dicked.
And then
28-0, whatever it was. And those didn't really bounce back.
Yeah.
Now, I know with Brassy's thing, it's like, you also need to prove to me that you're a bock. If you're in the squad,
Jam.
You're not a fringe or a secondary person. You must prove to me that you're here because I think you're the best. So there's all of this is taking place, like a game within a game within a game. And that is just so exciting as a bock supporter right now. Mm. The other thing was, this is the final points I'll make on this.
Yeah.
Rusty knows that he can beat these Oaks this week. He knows this.
Yeah.
So what he's maybe got is like, how do I get the biggest win this weekend with a weakened squad?
I just...
Psychologically, that's a bigger win, right?
I think so. But there is always, you know, we always discuss it as you hope you never underestimate your opponent, especially if you're playing away. Big issue is that we're also playing away. And I think Australia might come out and think this is such a huge insult. And really go for it.
Well, somebody's got to fire those Oaks. They were so limp.
And if this is not it,
they were so limp in Brisbane.
Jeez.
I mean, for a lot of those guys, I'd never played in front of so many people. Granted, most of them were South Africans. Okay, we got to get into New Zealand, Argentina. You were of the opinion this wasn't going to be that one-sided. I was like, those Oaks are getting smashed by 18 points. Take me on that one.
Thank you. We never usually say that New Zealand play horribly. They played horribly throughout. Ill-disciplined.
Damien McKenzie at 10.
It's the first time I've really seen a New Zealand team super ill-disciplined, looking like they don't know what they're doing. Out-hustled, out-sized, out-pushed. Even the enterprising stuff wasn't really going through as well. Argentina just getting through the gaps, you know, and I think...
Elite violence from Argentina. Yeah, there was aspects of it.
This is elite violence. Yeah. And I kept on saying, and I still do believe it, that Argentina, without the pressure of having to prove anything, they are coming out swinging. And this game is going to be closer than the last game because now we see what Argentina are made of and we probably really have to take them seriously.
And the All Blacks, I didn't think of this at all, which was, again, lazy from my side, is that they haven't got a great record of recent times in Wellington. They drew to the British and Irish Lions. They lost to the Irish. They drew with the Aussies. And now they lost to Argentina, all in this place.
I wanted to ask you a question, and you brought it up last week. Do you think New Zealand are actually a World Cup team instead of, like, you know, a great tournament team holistically?
No, they've kind of been the opposite with a touch more on the... So, look, the Rugby Championship / Tri Nations has taken place 28 times.
Yeah.
We've won 4. New Zealand have won 19 or 20?
I thought it was 14.
Yeah. Put it this way, they've only been wooden spooners twice. We've been wooden spooners 11 times.
Yeah.
So these Oaks know how to win all the time, and ultimately they win World Cups as they go in the cycles.
Yeah.
What I worry about, again, it's like, what are they doing at 10? What are they doing to physically assert themselves against the opposition? I mean, we saw it when the camera went across those hardened RGs in the haka. Those Oaks were like, I'm here to fight. I'm here to hurt some Oaks. This is the thing. And it just comes back to, where's the depth? Where's the grunt? You know, Brodie Retallick and Whitelock, those Oaks were like the old timber in the Thai
and
five.
Monsters. People were going to hustle for balls. And, you know, that's what I felt missed in this game, is like they were just so ordinary.
Yeah.
And I think they thought it was just going to happen, and too little too late. And Argentina were already there. I think Argentina, when they felt they were close, they said, we're here now. Let's go for it. And New Zealand was just like, we're going to figure it out. And it's a humiliating loss for them. And it puts them at such a back foot coming, you know, to our leg and possibly going into Australia now, because we're really going to question that team now.
Well, just looking at the comments here briefly, please feel free to put in as many comments as you wish. We'll get to them formally towards the end of the show. But as they pop up here, I mean, I think Dirk is basically our ghostwriter here, because if I make a rugby point here, and if Dirk agrees, then I know I'm on the right track here. They've lost the elite engine room. We use the word elite a lot here, but they've lost that. And they need Richie Maunga back. They need to actually basically say, look, All Blacks, go get your money. Go play anywhere in the world. here's the international games. We can't have this, like, you got to play in the village to be selected for the village bullshit.
Yeah.
It's come back to bite them so much. Damien McKenzie's not a 10. Yep. And I hope they realize that after the game in Cape Town, so they can play him a few more times.
Yeah, just actually don't realize it.
He's a super rugby player. I don't think he's got the ascendancy to do what he needs to do in that team. Just go back to putting a Barrett at 10, maybe. Just not Damien McKenzie. But what you said there about bouncing back and where they're going from here, the next match is this weekend, of course, at Eden Park.
Yeah.
Now, the last team to go to New Zealand and win back-to-back test matches against New Zealand was in 1994. It was the French, and the last time that they lost to Eden Park was against the French in 1994. So we spoke about history in Wellington, which I neglected.
Yeah.
History is the All Blacks always bounce back heavy at Eden Park.
Yep.
Okay, heavy. But that All Black team looks ruffled. You got a newish coach. Okay, Scott Robinson was GOAT of Super Rugby, 7 titles for the Crusaders.
In that true era, yeah.
He's coming and hiding to nothing, really, because he's expected to win straight away. But at the same time, he's expected to get the All Blacks back to where they are. Cool. Looks across his squad and goes, don't have much of a forward pack for this. Pretty directionless backline for this.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited about, obviously, the Bok game.
Yeah.
But I'm so excited about the RGs. Hopefully, they're not too hungover.
Yeah.
I'm excited about them going to that ground and going, you know what, guys, we can do it again this week.
I want to tell you, for me, and it's stuff that we've spoken about, how poor Super Rugby has become. And I think this last past weekend is such a big indictment of how bad Super Rugby is that, you know, the main two nations can't even get W's in this weekend. So,
Let's not go Australia being a main nation here. They're an associate nation.
You understand what I'm trying to say. So it's such a big indictment against, you know, Super Rugby, that it's so poor and that they're, you know, the two nations they can't get wins. And the depth is being battered. They come against, you know, true, you know, rugby nation teams and they can't even compete. And Super Rugby got to try to get it together or do something to, you know, increase the competitive nature of that league.
I will go a step deeper on that and how worrying things are for Australia. They've got the British and Irish Lions coming next, right? Because the Lions tour every 4 years as the rotation. Then they're hosting the next Rugby World Cup. You look across that thing there. Joe Schmidt could be cool. You're the guy.
Mm.
You're the guy for the next 4 years. I don't think he's the problem. Of course he's not the problem. But who are they planning to take on those juggernauts? To be a competitive team come World Cup time, it's almost like they need to go to rugby league, which people actually care about in Australia. They need to go to AFL, whatever they actually care about. Find some raw talent in there and go, guys, we're about to get embarrassed in front of the world by the British and Irish Lions and then hosting the Rugby World Cup because we won't get out of the group stage. Yep. We're about to get our pants pulled down here. So we are going to give you money to leave your code, come to rugby union.
Yep.
Pull it Israel Folau. Get a whole bunch of big guys who can actually really play.
Yeah.
Because it's not coming through their school systems.
Yep.
It's not coming through. They haven't got Varsity Cup. They haven't got a Curry Cup. They've got these franchises that play a bit of Super Rugby. Melbourne Rebels has been closed down.
It's been terrible also since the beginning.
The Aussies need to actually go, how much money we got and who can we buy from rugby league today? Not next year. Not Oaks when they're getting towards the end of their contracts today.
Like now. And if Argentina do what I think they're going to do, New Zealand rugby going to be some trouble.
All right, well, we'll get to some predictions towards the end of the show. But this weekend, of course, it is the start of the football seasons.
Oh, yes.
Now, the PSL is obviously going to start on September the 14th. So we'll get to that a little bit closer to the time. But English Premier League, La Liga, and to a lesser extent, Bundesliga and Serie A. Let's just focus on three for this time around, because to all you Napoli fans or
just give us a break, guys.
Or like Galatasaray fans or PSG fans. We can't cover every league here.
Please.
So English Premier League. Now, if I go on a Superbets, which I've done this week, just to give me kind of like a grounding of who's who and who's going to be really prominent. Yeah. We got Man City at 125 odds to be the top team to retain their title as outright winners.
Yeah.
Number two, we got Arsenal at 1.85.
Yep.
James, your Oaks, Liverpool.
Seven.
Seven. So it's a big drop, okay? So it's Man City, Arsenal, big drop to James at 7. Got Chelsea at 20, and your Oaks, Man United, are at 22.
That's crazy. James, we didn't greet you on the show. What's up, James?
Hello, gentlemen. How are we?
How are you all?
I'm great. I'm not that good after hearing those odds. That makes me a lot.
Well, I mean, look. James, we'll get into Liverpool a bit, but I mean, ultimately, first season without Klopp, How many years was Klopp there?
I think it was 6-7 seasons.
I mean, it was a long stretch because who was before him? There was because when he's
they would run through coaches. Benitez,
Roy Hodgson was one of them at some stage. We brought
Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Brought all the geriatrics.
Yeah. So the golden era of Liverpool, the Klopp era, is now done.
It's one title, guys. One EPL title. I hate that. No Klopp era.
Did Man United win a title with their 16 coaches in the last 5 years?
What are we talking about? Are we talking about when we won the Europa League with? I'm not going to get into debate with you. What do you say?
Because you lose.
No, I don't. Van Gaal won FA Cup. Erik ten Hag has won 2 cups at Wembley now.
Right.
Jose Mourinho won Europa League.
Okay. These all just sound like baby trophies.
Though. Oh, you got to win them. That's what they say.
I mean, we won a Champions
League. Okay, so we are going to talk Premier League here. And then, I mean, to Hamis's point, though, they won the English Premier League won since they won a Champions League. I mean, that to me says era.
That's right. At Club World Cup also. UEFA Super Cup also.
No. Okay, now you're pushing it.
2 FA Cups. I'm just saying.
Yeah, era, man.
I'm just saying.
Wow. Okay. Let's
focus it back.
Let's get you back after Cummins just dealt you 6 of the best trousers down there.
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously Man City are going to be title contenders. 100%. What do you think? Anything new or anything worrying about them?
I think when we just talk about, you know, the major dynamics for them before we even talk about, you know, the transfers is they got rid of Alvarez, which makes them a one center forward team now with Haaland having to play a whole bunch.
Sorry, you're getting burnt in the comments here too. Carry on.
And I just turned my eye. I was like, typical United fan. Yes, I'm going to die with my team. Going back to City. They are going to rely on Haaland for the whole season. They haven't signed a major center forward with all the football they are playing. And them selling Alvarez, it's going to be a big, big test of that team. You know, they've got Champions League, they've got EPL, they've got...
But a big test of him too, because he's quite hot and cold, eh? I wouldn't say he's like a...
Look, guys, he's still clinical. He's probably still the best striker in the EPL and in England.
He was nowhere last weekend, let's be honest.
He was nowhere.
He showed some times of being tempestuous, I think is the word.
Yeah. And you know what? And Thierry Henry called it out. He's not a dynamic enough runner off the ball. He's a traditional like center forward. He's going to make one run through KDB. And he needs to learn how to come short, mix up his game. And I think we're onto him like every major player. You know, once you pick up too many strict habits, we're going to pick it up. So Man City, I really want to see how they're going to go through a whole season with one legit center forward. It's going to be a big issue. Moving on to Arsenal. Arsenal didn't make any major transfers. You know, they've got...
Didn't need to. So
just hold on. They've got everything they need. Hold on, let me make the analysis. And you know me, I'm not one to compliment Arsenal, but I really love the fact they backed Michael Arteta. He had a great season, even though he didn't lift anything. He had a superb season, probably one of the best Arsenal seasons with the most points in the EPL.
Can you imagine not getting backed after they backed Arsene forever?
Forever. Like, and you really have to back that team now. I think they've matured. I think that, you know, losing has probably given them a lot of steel. They're back in the Champions League. So I think, you know, Arsenal, this is the time for them to chase it, you know, because I know that international football is going to absolutely destroy that team if they don't go for a deep run in it.
I would say tactically, laugh off the Champions League straight away.
Look, they made a great run. They made a greatish run last year. We didn't think they were going to go that deep. And they pushed. And unfortunately, if you draw the big teams, you draw the big teams in true Arsenal fashion. You go out, you know. So they have a good, you know, they have a good team. Big team that I can't believe they got a 7 rating to win the league is Liverpool, because they've got probably the biggest questions moving into the new season, post-Klopp era.
Sorry, just when you say 7 rating, of course, that's just odds. So odds, like your 100 will get you back a logistic 800.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're not just talking about a 7-star team or anything. You're getting you understood
what I was trying to say, guys. they've probably got the most difficult transition now. You've got a lot of players that are probably over the hill. Mo Salah probably not going to be as prominent as he was before, and I probably will end up eating my words. Virgil van Dijk, questionable throughout the season last year.
He had that really bad injury, and he just never quite got back from that.
He never got back, and we know that now they have to implement a new system. They're probably not going to press as much as they used to. New coach, new identity. So that is going to be the team to watch for. I'm really curious what they do this weekend. We'll actually get to see them properly now. And then Man United, aka AXFC, aka AX United. We've backed Tendag again.
So clearly, I mean, to use the Arsenal thing as well, he loved a good Frenchie in his team, didn't he?
My goodness.
Or we a French African descendant. He's just gotten full Dutch this
season. He's gone full Dutch, a full Eredivisie, all his ex-girlfriends.
Talented kids you saw in a park growing up. You're in.
But for me, it is Man United's intention to go for backing the coach and saying, you know what? If we get rid of you at the end of the season, it was not our fault. And, you know, we've revamped holistically from, you know, assistant manager, tactical, sporting directors. You know, we're revamping the club. It's an exciting time for Man United. I don't think we're going to win the league. And I hate to say that, but I think we're going to compete and we're going to be much better than we were before. It was always going to be a project. So this is now probably the last step for Ten Hag. And we're going to question him.
Well, if they get rid of him, they're going to get another Dutch guy because of all the Dutch players. I mean, just on language barrier, you're going to get the job if you speak Dutch.
Yeah, but definitely Man City is still for favorites to win the league. Yeah.
All right. So looking at the English league is, it gets so much attention, of course. It's the league that historically people always have a second team here for South Africa, or they're actually the primaries. You know, people always go like, well, I'm an Arsenal, Liverpool, Man United, whatever fan.
Yeah.
To look at like teams off the beaten track here, we know that in the past has been like a Leicester that's won.
Yeah.
We know even further back in the 90s, a Blackburn came out of nowhere and won. Mm. Do you feel like that's ever going to be possible again now because these squads are so strong, they're so entrenched, and it's a resource game?
Yeah, I think in the EPL, we all had major hopes for what Newcastle were going to do, especially kicking off from two seasons ago. Then they just couldn't get it over the line. You know, I think, like we're saying, everybody was shocked at how great they were. But teams like Aston Villa, West Ham.
Aston Villa, what? They finished fourth last year, right?
Aston Villa going to the Champions League, if I'm correct. Yeah,
they finished fourth. Well, they beat Spurs. Spurs finished fifth. So
Spurs is going to be Spurs, you know, never ever.
Well, I didn't
ever,
ask. I
never
ask.
Ever clicking over, but Aston Villa. we hope Aston Villa kick on. Yeah, I think Aston Villa is probably that team that we're probably going
to
watch out for.
And just to address the Chelsea team, because I've heard nothing positive. I've just heard odd stories around these Oaks.
Even Chelsea fans don't want. The reason I don't want to even talk about Chelsea is because my best friend is a Chelsea fan. Like, don't even waste your time. We got to go get rid of those 100 players in our first team. He doesn't even know who's still on his books anymore. He's like, geez, we signed 11 new players. What are we on about? So you never know what's happening with Chelsea.
All of them
we wish
for like
them most.
10 years also. Yeah. You got like 11
strangest
10-year contracts.
That strangest contract signed till 2030. I'm like, what is going on at Chelsea? But yeah, don't worry about them.
I got something to add just on your question, Ben, is
how
teams can actually, these anomaly teams can win league titles, right? I think these days in the Premier League, it's not enough to just have a good team and a good structure.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about having consistency in the Premier League these days? I mean, City's the only team that has proper actual consistency week on week, and that brings them titles. I think outside of just having a good team, you probably also need some kind of consistency.
Well, I mean, a good team will be consistent because they're just consistently better than their opposition, I guess.
For sure.
And I think this is probably one of the most competitive areas of, you know, Premier League football.
Absolutely.
You know, now we're getting, you know, leagues being decided by you have to win majority of your games, or two games you're like, you're out of the league, you know, title chase. So it's probably the most competitive era of EPL football. And that's also a testament for how great from top to bottom teams are, you know. Surprise teams are very hard to come by, but very competitive.
All right. So look, Spain, La Liga, that's the one that gets a bit of headlines because, of course, Real Madrid's a big team. Barcelona's a big team. Again, going back to what Superbets has given us here.
Yeah.
Real Madrid are 0.4 to win. Barcelona 3.5. And then Atletico would be the other sort of maybe dog in the fight at 10. But ultimately, Real Madrid went through a couple of speed bumps here and there. But last year, they were good. They won. Big send-up for Toni Kroos.
Yeah.
This year, much the same. They've got Mbappe in it now. You can't see them anyone else but winning by these guys, huh?
Oh, Real Madrid, it feels like the Galactico era all over again. They've got Endrick in, who is absolutely sensational. They finally got Kylian Mbappe. And when I watched them yesterday, that team is so fluid. You'd think that they've been playing together for like 5-6 years. And, you know, players like Rodrigo, we don't know what happens with them, but he's probably just going to slot in naturally. And they signed, they kept a veteran as well. Luka Modric comes in one more time and gives strong leadership once again. It is going to be, I think it's just going to be one of those seasons where Real Madrid just wipes the floor with everyone. I think Jude Bellingham is going to win that Ballon d'Or. I think he's going to win it. And once again, him and Vinicius, it's just too good. And also they've got the greatest coach in history. And I'm going to put it out there, you know. And he's a serial winner. Okay. King Carlo is amazing.
I mean, I'm solid. You'd have to go carry on.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. And moving on to Barcelona, the reason I think the major issue with Barcelona is their financial issues right now. They couldn't sign anybody major in the transfer window. They've got a new coach. It doesn't look great, but they have great talent post the Euros. Yamal is now coming to his, you know, into his
17-year-old veteran, Yamal.
You know,
he's got a new girlfriend. I mean,
he's got one more year to leave matriculate. he had a great Euro, so you work off that. And you still got Lewandowski as one of the all-time greats, but it doesn't look good for them. And Atletico Madrid.
Is Diego Simeone still the coach there?
Of course he is. They love that guy.
Did he get a Chelsea deal?
He got a long thing. When you're ready, we are ready. You know.
But I mean, again, like, because he got them the Liga title, didn't he?
Yeah, but it's,
out of nowhere. I mean, that was talk about elite violence. That was purely elite about that.
Yeah, that was
I think he was violent in the boardroom to get that deal, and then he just scared everyone into being good.
Yeah, and so Atletico Madrid will be in the mix, but
yeah, but I mean, like, it's just not a contender title.
Yeah, it's not. It's gonna be I'd be shocked if anything exciting happens in La Liga. It's probably just going to be a whitewash.
Okay, so I'm feeling like you're going to agree with me by saying the same for the Bundesliga, because yes, Bayern have been so good, but they lost last year. Bayer Leverkusen won the league. They could have won the Europa title, but they came and stuck against Atalanta. Bayern are -0.5 on the Superbet odds here. Bayer Leverkusen are 2.55, and then Dortmund are like the Atletico here. They're 11.0.
Look, you never underestimate Bayern Munich. And they're coming off a very bad season. But they have pumped their transfers in. I think they brought in about 5 new players. Harry Kane's still going to be Harry Kane. He's still going to be world class. My biggest call out with Bundesliga is going to be Leverkusen. Can they do it again? They are no longer a surprise package.
Yeah,
we're not going to go through life saying, can Xabi Alonso lose? He is going to be the target on everyone's back. I think they've studied him like throughout the books. He also brought in new players, but can Xabi Alonso do it again? It's always the hardest to defend it, as we all have seen, like Leicester, Dortmund. And once, you know, Bayern Munich are angry and fill up their transfer window, they usually tend to just, you know, go out and prove a point. So it's a super exciting time because, you know, winning 4 titles is no joke, which, you know, Xabi Alonso did. And it's a new era of, Bayern Munich. So could it be super aggressive? Could it be a loss, you know? But they still have superstars in their back. They've gotten rid of De Ligt and Mazzarri, but they still have a lot of depth in that lineup. But I still do think they're going to miss De Ligt as well, you know, because he is actually a world-class player. So
I like the idea that Arsenal will finally hold on to win the title and Harry Kane will finally win a trophy.
No.
I'm seeing the correlation between these two things from what you're dropping down here. But also, I mean, like in the Champions League final, the final is at their ground this year. So that's another inspiring kind of thing for them.
Doesn't matter. Real Madrid going to win that. We know for sure what Real Madrid going to win that. So the coaching battle is going to be interesting for the Bundesliga. Dortmund, we're going to get sparks of Dortmund here and there. But every time, and I used to hate this about Dortmund, they have great players. Then they end up just being culled and just going to some other team. You know, Jadon Sancho's back and he was great for Dortmund. So that's it from my takes on Bundesliga.
Okay, well, look, I'm with you on that. On the 3 major leagues, we're going to go with the favorites. Man City are looking like the best.
Yeah.
But I do believe that Arsenal is due, if they are realistic and bow out of the Champions League early. This is my high-end synopsis.
Don't do this to yourself, Ben. Guys, Arsenal fans, just enjoy the run. It's too early to put odds in.
Don't listen to this Man United fan. That's just his take.
Yeah, you know, because, look, it broke my heart when Arsenal fans really invested in a W. They were like,
"Chow, that was a tough year last year."
And, then I'll never forget it because my friend Fez was reminding me, he said, it was that game against Aston Villa where we lost and we lost the title. And they were up like 6 points. And,
destiny was in our hands. It was in our gun.
And in a true Arsenal fashion, just blew it right at the end.
Okay, so talking about not blowing it is, of course, this weekend is the UFC. Now, people are talking about what's the game plan, what time must we wake up to watch the fights. As always, like in all combat sports, you have an undercard, you get a main card. So the fight's going to be taking place in Perth. So South African time, the main card starts at 4 a.m. Now, what that means is that there'll be five fights that lead up to, so there's four fights and then a title fight. So wake up at 4. Get into it. It's going to be a great card. It's not the most star-studded, but you've got a whole bunch of Aussies. You've got Tai Tuivasa is going to be swinging from the fences as always. You've got Dan Hooker on the fight after that. You've got Steve Ursak versus Kai Kara-France. There's good fights here. I know when I told my mates to watch Drickus's last fight, who were new to UFC, they watched the cuckest, most boring snorefest on that Canada card.
Yeah.
This will be different. Trust me on this one. 4 a.m. South African time. Be up for it. It's going to be amazing. I mean, I was excited about this weekend to start with because the Bucks are going to be playing again. I was excited this weekend to start with because I watch every UFC, every UFC number event. The thing about Drickus fighting Israel Adesanya right now in his career, it is the best time possible. So to give you a bit of backtrack on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
When Drickus was coming up in the UFC, Israel Adesanya was the dominant champ. Now, what happened with Israel Adesanya was he was a kickbox phenom. Okay, so he fought mostly in China. He fought in Pride. Glory, I think it was. Strange how hardcore kickboxing things have names like Glory and Pride.
And Pride. I was like, what? The
association is not with combat sports, combat other stuff.
Yeah.
So Israel was really, really great. Okay, this is before bringing Pereira into the mix, which isn't pertinent to this story.
Yeah.
He was always going to be slated towards having an MMA career. There's more money in that. Yeah. I think it's better for your career. And the UFC are always looking for a great story. So what normally happens is that the UFC almost like curate your story and they feed you the right opponent to get into a sort of story arc. And I believe Israel falls into this. Drickus wasn't. Drickus, we'll get to him in a second where his story arc went. But Adesanya had seven fights. Seven fights. He got the interim title by beating, I think it was Calvin Gastelum. And then basically fought Robert Whittaker for the title. Now, this was in Australia. It was the biggest crowd in the UFC. It was phenomenal. And Izzy coming up, because he was the contender coming up, he fought in a certain way and he was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
I have so much respect for this guy's body of work. He got there, and then he became the champion. And then he kind of, in my opinion, again, this is just my humble MMA opinion, he got back a bit. He started monitoring his fights more. He managed his fights more. He was happy with a five-round decision. Obviously, when he fought against clowns like Paulo Costa, he got knockouts.
Yeah.
Amazing fighter. So accomplished because of all the fights he had in kickboxing.
Yeah.
He's had like 50 kickboxing fights. So he knows his way around a professional combat sport, okay? He's now 35 years old. He then lost the title, and he's now in the position where he's the number two ranked middleweight in the UFC. Okay, so this is where he is now. We don't have to get any more into the story from there. As I said, Drickus du Plessis was coming up. He was a double division champion in the EFC locally here in South Africa. He got the KSW welterweight title. He then subsequently lost that, but also accomplished. He's 5 years younger than Adesanya, so he's a 30-year-old. But Drickus has traveled the world.
Yeah.
He always wanted to learn new things. He actually was in like a fight camp in Thailand where he fought against Adesanya. They sparred.
Oh, crazy.
And they grappled. And Drickus has gone to camps all around because he's always working on his skills.
Yeah.
He's done camps in America. He's been all over the place. So Drickus got into the UFC around all that controversy around COVID, okay? Mm. So he didn't have the curator's story arc. I'll tell you that much. The UFC saw him. They saw his abilities. There's definitely a lot of respect around that. They gave him a short notice fight against Marcus Perez.
Yeah.
Who had never been finished in the UFC, okay? Worthy opponent. Drickus cleaned the luck up in the first round, no problem. Oh, Drickus then went on to clean up a few X in the first round and just carry on through them because this is the kind of fighter he is. He's a finisher. And all this time, while Israel is seen as the golden boy, style bender, can't put a foot wrong, he's the oak on the EA Sports games. Drickus was this guy who was seen as this marauding, awkward fighter who will ultimately get beaten by someone soon.
Yeah,
but nobody did. Nobody beat him.
Yeah.
Seven fights, just like Adesanya, seven fights. Drickus is now the title champion.
Yeah.
He got there. He fought Robert Whittaker. Everyone's like, this is the ceiling, bro. You've already come too far. This is your ceiling. Cleaned him up in two rounds. Beat Sean Strickland. Absolutely won that, even though it was split decision.
Yeah.
And we now have this very interesting dynamic that both of these fighters took seven fights to get to the title. Izzy up and down. But Israel's lost. This will be his third. This fight this weekend will be 13 in a row where he's fought four in the title fight. Either as holder or a contender.
Oof.
Incredible record, right? Yeah. So that's high-end longevity.
Yeah.
But then Drickus is this unstoppable force he's got there on his own terms, and he is at the apex of where he is as a fighter.
Yeah.
So that is my little sort of interlude as to why this fight is so incredible. And then you got the obvious bad blood about Drickus saying, well, I respect all of these guys, but I want to be the first guy who trains in Africa, from Africa, who then fights in the UFC, and I haven't gone to another country.
Yeah.
That's kind of how things got taken out of context. And Israel's gone pretty hard after that about true Africanism, all this kind of stuff. The harder he went on this made me realize that maybe he's doubting his abilities a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the edge comes into this.
Yeah.
Trajectory is a major thing in combat sports. Yep. Izzy would fight four times a year, pretty much every year.
Yeah.
He hasn't fought since last September.
Shucks.
So we now have a new Israel Adesanya fighting against what we know is Drickus Du Plessis.
Yeah.
And that is why this was the longest intro to a piece of content.
I was like, can I jump in at some point?
So all I'm saying is that, guys, we have this fight is so interesting because it's the first time Israel Adesanya's had a proper strength and conditioning camp because obviously he thinks he needs more against Drickus.
Yeah, of course he does.
So that is the longest, long-winded intro around why this fight is going to be incredible and why you need to wake up and watch this. Any questions? I'll take questions. Yes, you in the hats. What do you guys?
Firstly, great intro. I think for me, it's probably one of the most marketable UFC fights we've seen in a long
well
time.
Well said. Well said.
Because you're going to bring in a whole bunch of different dynamics, different fans. I will say, wake up. If you want to get into UFC, this is the fight to get into UFC.
Right.
Because the storylines are of WWE proportions. You want to back a South African champ? Let's go back it. Sia and Eben apparently are walking him down.
Which is kind of almost set in stone, right? Like, it's written in the wind, as they say, the whimsical things. Because the box play on the Saturday night in Perth, and essentially, it'll be like Saturday early.
Yeah.
And then late at night on this.
It's the UFC fight. Yeah.
So, Sia and Eben are going to be walking out with Drickus.
Yeah. And don't make the mistake I made. If you guys just wake up at a decent time, if you want to watch the main fight, go for it. If you're not committed to going through like 4 hours of UFC, you don't have to do it. But just, manage your time accordingly. A lot of people got frustrated at that. The actual fight is later. It's the build up to the fight. If you've watched boxing before, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yes, it's the most exciting fight. It is a true African fight. I hate the other narratives about it. And if Drickus wins, and I think everybody is, Dana added a more spice into this fight, is he is committed to bringing a fight to South Africa on that.
It's like Drickus didn't need any more inspiration, and Dana basically just took it over the edge. If I was Israel Adesanya and I heard that, I'd be like, oh, fuck.
I mean,
you should actually say, oh, fuck.
And he's walking down with Springboks. I feel like Drickus is living all his childhood dreams.
He absolutely is, guys. But this is it. He absolutely is. And this is another thing. Like, people say, oh, I don't watch UFC. I don't watch MMA. It's too brutal. Yeah. We are witnessing basically an apex, pinnacle, alpha, Springbok / South African sporting moment. Yeah. It does not get it. Yeah. You cannot script this.
Yeah.
It's like Tom Cruise just had that whole thing about going from Paris to LA, right? Yeah. There was like, someone's like, this is the greatest moment. Tom Cruise is going to skydive and it's the Hollywood things. What they created there was one of those, like, guys, this is like the biggest moment. What we've got this Sunday morning with those two rugby players, iconic rugby players. I mean, Sia Khaleesi is a global star.
Yeah.
Even Nesmith, I don't care if you don't even know what sport is. You look at that because you know global, he's important.
Yeah. And it's going to be, and it sets it up for such an incredible rematch, because I think Dana White knows that he's probably going to be the Don King of this fight. He can't be a purist about it. There is definitely a part two to the story. And it's
Carry on. I'm about to absolutely disagree with you.
It's a great story. Everybody wants the part two. If Drickus wins, Israel's going to say, I want again. And it's the most marketable fight. You know, we had a conversation about why UFC keeps on bringing back Conor because of the marketability. This is probably one of the most marketable fights in UFC, outside of being a purist of UFC. That's what I wanted to just close off on that one.
Okay, I'll tell you what. So in Drickus's run-up, he retired Derek Brunson. He retired Darren Till. He retired Marcus Perez, but he went pillow fighting after that. He broke his spirit.
Yeah.
If Drickus wins this fight, I can tell you right now, Israel Adesanya is going to retire.
Ooh,
he's going to retire, because I think you lose, you fight, you do all these kind of things, but you don't come up across a guy who is this destined for success.
Okay.
Drickus is the most single-minded success story in the sport, and I think he's brought professionalism to the UFC that we haven't seen from other people.
Yep.
I know it's a really big thing to say, but I watch a lot of stuff outside of fights because that's just how my sporting brain works. Yep. Drickus, in his second language, will beat anybody in a press conference. He'll shit talk your pants off. Yeah. He will make the higher ground easy for himself in his second language.
Yeah.
The Soak has a brain around his sport that I haven't seen since, I don't know, maybe Lewis Hamilton, the way he plots themselves around Formula One.
Yeah.
The Soak's another level.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to beat Adesanya in such a way, Israel's going to look at this and go, what else have I actually got to do? The Soak has just humbled me. And I'm not saying it's going to be a one-sided fight. As I said, Israel Adesanya is an incredible athlete. He's a sporting icon.
Yeah.
I think Drickus is going to retire him. To your point about being a rematch, if Drickus wins, he's going to retire him. If Drickus loses, okay, and I'm going through this permutation purely to play devil's advocate, yeah. I think the UFC are going to quickly work to how they can support Israel Adesanya more, and they're going to give him the Strickland fight, because they've already said that Strickland fates the winner of these two. They have not mentioned rematch whatsoever.
Yeah.
But what you said there about the fight coming to Africa.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that if Adesanya is so passionate about being the true African fighter and took a lot of umbrage to that comment, I'm surprised that he isn't basically saying, Dana's saying, whatever happens here, we are considering a rematch in Africa. Because why doesn't Israel want to fight in Africa? If Israel wins this fight, right? What, the next fight's going to be in New Zealand?
Yep.
It should be in Africa regardless.
That's a great point. But I wanted to go back to you, what you're talking about in terms of professionalism. As we've seen, you know, a lot of, you know, the famous UFC champions usually become theatrical guys. You know, you've seen what happened to Conor and Israel at a big extent. I have never seen somebody so focused on just being a UFC fighter. You know, he gives me a true mindset of like a Kobe Bryant. He's an athlete first before he's a personality anywhere else. So that's actually, that's such a great point about Drickus.
I agree. And you know, every major fight week like this, you get the UFC embedded vlogs that go out. Basically, it's like what happens on the ground.
Yeah.
And just watch how the Soak carries himself. This isn't just me being a South African sports fan or a Drickus fan. Watch how the Soak carries himself around everyone else. There is something so unflinchingly consistent about how this guy goes about everything he does. He believes he was destined to be the champion. He now is the champion. There's not a fuck anyone's going to take this belt off him.
Yep.
He will gladly bring the belt back to South Africa. You can now see it and have a look at it if you buy his drink or whatever.
Yeah.
But he is not losing this fight.
Yeah.
Because in his mind, he doesn't know how that works.
Yeah.
It's like we will look at this show and go, okay, we need to talk about this, then I might need to talk about this. Yeah. Drickus doesn't see anything other than permutation of, I'm going to go here, I'm going to win, and I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it again. Until my body cannot do that again, but then whatever, I'll get to that when I'm 38.
Yeah.
So, this is what I'm going to say. I'm just going to say, Drickus is going to retire Israel Adesanya this weekend.
That's a big call.
That's it?
That's a big call.
That's all I got for you.
Yeah, great week for UFC, guys. If you want to become a UFC fan, this is the week to get into it.
I have something to throw in.
Yes,
I know we said we were getting to comments at the end, but yes. I have to jump in to show you guys how great of a weekend this sounds for Ricky Lowe. If you guys just want to give that one a read.
Yeah, so Ricky's been listening to the Gareth Cliff show. He comments a lot about the UFC stuff. So Ricky lives in Australia, and last year Drickus was going to fight in Sydney. And Ricky was like, I'm in, I'm going to do this. So now he says he's going to a Bok Jol tomorrow night. Okay, so Friday night, got Rickus Nell, Bobby van Jaarsveld, and Joe Black. Because Drickus went early to Perth, right?
Yeah.
And he's been just fan parking. They watched the game. South Africans came out in their droves, so he's been there cementing the fanding. And then Saturday is going to the rugby as Ricky, and then Sunday, obviously it's late Saturday night, he's going to the UFC.
Oh man, I pray for your liver.
Trust me, Ricky's been preparing for this.
Yeah,
he's not coming in cold with this one.
Prepare for it. Yeah, I pray for it. And Ricky, that's flipping amazing, man. That sounds so dope. Man.
This is what I love. People are now getting so invested in these sporting weekends and these sporting experiences.
Yeah.
it's just so hard not to be so proud of our athletes, because they're not just making a living, they're not just playing sports.
They're being champions, they are
absolutely galvanizing societies. Yeah. Wow.
Love that.
I didn't think I used the word galvanized on the show, but we're going to come back. Short break. I spent my drink down, and we're going to get into the weekend. Of course, our calls. Last week, Sandile got something wrong, and James has not let him live it down. This week, he's going to redeem himself, and I'm obviously going to give you three of my best as well. We're back. Ah, yeah, Flex. Thanks, man. Okay, we're back. Sorry, I was just checking a message. Right, guys. So this weekend, we've got, we mentioned it, like, there's just so much on the go because football's back. And obviously, that means a whole bunch of fixtures. Now, again, with all respect to Galatasaray, PSG, Turin,
whoever
you support, we're going to just cover the English ones here. So I'm going to run through them quickly. So, Sandile, your team is playing Fulham, 9 o'clock Friday night, all time South African time, of course. Saturday, we've got Ipswich Town. They're the newbies, right?
Yep.
They've come straight up, their little prancing horse. Mm. They're taking on James's team, Liverpool at 1:30. Arsenal will be attacking the Wolves at 4. Newcastle versus Southampton at 4 as well. Sunday.
Ooh, big game.
Chelsea's bunch of knock-around guys on 10-year contracts will be taking on the Man City at 5:30. And then the Monday game is Leicester versus Spurs. Big weekend for golf as well. We haven't touched on it, we haven't had time this week. But the FedEx Cup starts. So basically that's the top 100 guys, 125. Go in the FedEx Cup, and then from there it goes to the St. Jude Classic this weekend. There's the BMW Championship, and then we've got the Tour Championship. So it whittles down by your ranking there. But let's start with my picks. Okay, so as we know, Rugby Championship, we got the first game, New Zealand versus Argentina. That's at Eden Park. Now, I'm going to go with Argentina here. Well, look, I'm excited about Argentina, right? I'm going to say when I go with them, I'm giving them the handicap of 12.5. So they start off with 12.5. They're not going to win this game, but I reckon the handicap of 12.5 will win you the bet. The box, we know they're a very understrength team, but we've got the insurance policy on the bench of guys like Markel Marks, Ibn Etzebeth, Vincent Koch, Oxenchair. They can come on a blitz on the Oaks with some elite violence if need be. So I'm still going to go with Australia needing, sorry, give the handicap to South Africa 11.5. And then I'm going to back Drikus to win. Obviously, I'm going to back Drikus to win. I'm not saying how he's going to win. I think he's going to do it. He's already said he's going to submit him in the third round. So those are my three picks for the weekend, which will get you a handsome 6.41. Put a hypothetical 100 onto that. You're going to get 7.41 in your Superbets account. Like Sandile, what do you got up your sleeve?
Those are big calls, Ben.
What do you got up your sleeve? Because Kamis can't wait to,
scrutinize my picks. Keeping it at EPL. Welcome back, guys, to people ruining your lives. 11 guys ruining your lives. I've got Man United beating Fulham. Cross your fingers. I've got Man City to beat Chelsea. Obviously, going to happen. And Arsenal to beat Wolves. Your $100 with me this week, very low. We'll give you 346.
Right? Yeah, a little 2.46 on those three results. I've taken your results, Sandile. I've gotten into Superbets today.
Yeah.
I've taken those three fixtures and I put my money onto that. Yeah. So obviously you can bet on the UFC, you can bet on Currie Cup, that's still in the mixed rugby championship, and of course all of the football, and of course the Liga also starts. We've got the Bundesliga starting. And if you are new to this, when you go onto superbets.co.za, when you put in your deposit, there's a code there. Use OTB, basically the show's initials, OTB, and your sign up basically will match up to 5,000 Rand. So it's always cool because now we've got all the football seasons happening. Rugby Championship is just starting, and we've got other things that are coming into it. I mean, if you love Test cricket, the Proteas can even give you a market or two on Superbets this weekend. See how I snuck it in there. So go on to superbets.co.za. Of course, they are our partners in the show here. And it's kind of where I base a lot of my calls to start for the week. I look at the odds, bit of a, I don't know if I'm cheating here.
Like,
but if you want to see, like, you know, where things are going to go, and then I get my insights from there. So I always start at superbets.co.za, and that's how I roll from there. James, can we have some top comments just to wrap up for the week?
For sure. First one from Dirk. Still back to the rugby and this weekend ahead.
Yeah, okay. So Dirk's very much our closet rugby analyst here. Yeah. And he seems to know what's going on here. Russie knows that number one, New Zealand wanting to throw the kitchen sink at Argentina this week, which is good for us, with the SA games coming up. And then the competition is an all box position are clear. Sorry, the competition in all box positions are probably closer than we think. Yeah, it's a very good point, Dirk, touching on that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at just within our props, sure, we've got so much talent in there. My only concern is, and it's only injury concern, so it's not actually a real concern, is that we are quite low in the lock stocks. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the Aussies are naturally quite low in the locks.
Yep.
We know that the All Blacks are very low in the locks. They're getting some under 20 guy to come into the mix now.
He's going
to
be knocked around.
And Argentina haven't got great depth on that. So I think when our locks are bolstered and come back to full strength, there isn't a team in this world, I think, that can touch us.
Yeah. I think, look, the rotation policy has to be a bit strict, especially with all the traveling times and week to week, you don't really get that much, you know, rehab time. So let's back the rotation. But
I think also just back the rotation for what the rotation is.
Yeah.
This isn't just a few speculative things here. Russie's looking at these combinations as how can this guy prove himself the most. So earlier in the show, I mentioned if you're going to bring a young scrum off him, give him a experienced fly half. Or if you're going to bring a young hooker in, give him an experienced prop. I think what Russie's doing is saying, I'm not giving you that safety blanket. I'm giving you an opportunity.
Go get the experience, yep.
I'm giving the opportunity to shine and actually really take the game by the scruff of your neck.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think we've seen it with, you know, such a fine Bongomo Zulu and how he stepped up. So nice. I think he's backing that, you know, that policy. So
Do you like that or just like my take on that?
I like your whole take on that. Nice. Well, come on, nice. Man.
How much else we got there?
Yeah.
Scouting, what do we think?
All Blacks need to scout those neighboring islands against Signet. It's a fair point.
I agree.
Especially seeing as Samoa don't have money to tour. Look, I think they have. There's no doubt they have. And I think it's just become such a treadmill of how they get them in. But it's what do you do with the talent? And this is what we keep coming back to.
Yeah.
You can put talent into Super Rugby. It's not going to make them Super Rugby players.
Yep.
That was not a intended play on words. Yeah. But it's just... We used to harden the Islanders coming through because the box would give of their best.
Yep.
And when those guys got into teams like Sione Loaki or someone like that, they'd be playing against the best. When you take those big muscle Oaks and you put them against Oaks that are a bit aimless,
it's just no competition.
You're not gonna what's
you
the thing?
You don't get better. You don't get more competitive.
Diamonds are made from pressure.
Yes. Yes. Shut up.
So there's no pressure, therefore the diamonds aren't coming through from the islands.
But it's a bit colonialist. I don't know if I support it holistically. Wow. But I understand what you're saying. Maybe they should. They're so bad now.
What do we think about Americans getting involved in a different kind of football that they usually involved in?
American
that owns Chelsea, just by the way, to give this context.
Like we said, go over. I mean, obviously, like owning the team or to go play?
No, there's an American that owns Chelsea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Man United's owned by Americans.
Yeah, and we're fighting with it. They just have.
I feel like his answer's going to go badly after that.
With the Chelsea guy, he's just trying to really overly flex post the Abramovich era, which we've seen. He spent like I think over $1 billion now on his team just so he could be successful in some elements. You know. I don't think he gets the culture of Chelsea football.
It's such a good point because English football amongst all else, I think, is a very much a culture-based thing.
Yep. And he's getting players in, and I don't know if he's got a great scouting system. It's something that we struggled with actually post, you know, Alex Ferguson era, is you've got these American owners who were winners before, and now the coach is gone. The system has fallen at the waistline. You can't just spend on big names. So now... they're still going through that process. So American football owners, serial winners at heart, but don't know the cultural aspects of how to build a football team. Yeah.
So, I mean, I did see something quite funny on X is that this guy thinks that he's making an NFL team with a big draft.
100%. And he's just saying, if you're the best, you'll come through. We're going to cut you at the end of the season. He just bought like another 11 players. I can't believe it. Like, I don't even know what Chelsea should, if I were to ever buy one, who I'd buy. You know, it's crazy.
So great question there from Michaela. Michaela's obviously a female sports fan. Now, if you are a female sports fan as well, / presenter, we, of course, are running our female features presenter search right here on The Bounce. Now, for the month of August, we are looking for fresh talent that's basically want to be part of the show. So if you are what we want here on the show is like different takes, that kind of stuff. Sandile and I can talk for about 7 hours. We truncate the show hugely just to make it an hour.
Yeah.
But we also want new voices. We want fresh takes on these kind of things, not just for different faces, but for different insights. So if you are a female sports fanatic, we really want to get your insights and your take on the show. So if you feel you keep part of it, we are doing this presenter search. go onto Instagram, upload an audition video. I know that might sound a bit cringy for some people, but ultimately we need to know what kind of content you can create. We want to know what your sort of background is with creating content. And just to kind of get your personality, you know, we can't have like a line outside the door here where we sit down and interview people formally.
Yeah.
So we're going to, we work in the social space. So we need to have a product of what you look like in that space. So tag us on Instagram, upload a video, obviously just a reel up to a minute. And just basically, you know, what it could be. It could be a feature that you want to present, or you could just basically show us what you got when it comes to sport, or just talk about how you love Man United, whatever it may be. We're doing it for all of August. It closes August 31st when the Boks beat the All Blacks at Ellis Park. So up until then, send through your audition clips and you could be on the show. September, we're going to be running through our finalists. In October, it'll be your first gig. This is, of course, a paying gig as well. We're not just looking to run through people for exposure. We are far past that. We're a professional outfit that's on the bounce show. So get involved. James, anything else? We're wrapping it up.
Nothing from me personally. I just think this comment's interesting and a cool way to end the show for rugby, women rugby, female rugby in South Africa.
Right. So Dirk says here, must mention SA Rugby finally finding the money to contract female players and hopefully get the women's game into position in the next, to be top six within the next few years. We are way behind the rest of the world. Just on that, I mean, obviously, congrats, or not congrats, but like a really big step for the Bulls, because the Bulls have been contracting women. They were the first team to become completely professional. Okay. I have spent some time with some female rugby players. It's not from a lack of effort or training or desire. It's a resource game. I mean, we saw now in Paris, you know, our ladies in the sevens got pretty hammered most games. They did manage to beat Fiji, I think it was. So, you know, that's a great stop. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's all going to happen, right? And the stronger that we become as the top team and filters down, ultimately that's how these teams work.
Yep.
But ladies, just remember, elite violence will make your sport better.
100%.
Just, that's it. The funds are going to come in. Just keep the violence high. And that's how you do well in sport.
Cool.
So, Dilly, anything else from you?
No, I'm good. It's going to be a crazy weekend, guys. Yeah, let's do it.
Damn excited about this. Alrighty. Catch you back next week. And be sure to upload your pictures from the clipdriftthatsgold.co.za of your picks. And with your player, you could be winning a case of Clipdrift Premium this weekend.